Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Previously.tv Podcast Network.
Can you tell me something? Is it me or are these people?
Yes.
Thank you. I'm so glad you said that. I was starting to feel like it was me.
Hello, everybody. This is Again With This, Beverly Hills 90210 edition. Today's episode is Season 3, Episode 20, Parental Guidance Recommended. That's the title. Also probably a good idea for this podcast. Fuck you, kids. Now here are your hosts, Tari Arrieta.
Hi, Sarah.
Hello. I feel obligated to warn everyone that we are emotionally exhausted after recording the last episode, but that's not the only reason that this episode might seem a little dull. That's because Parental Guidance Recommended is very dull and interminable.
Yep.
But we will try to liven it up for you.
We'll do our best. Let's get started.
If only we had chickens.
I really am shocked that you didn't save the chicken drop.
Oh.
Live chicken drop. All right, let's start. With our E story, yes, it goes up to E.
Holy crap.
Brandon's never-ending fucking gambling problem. At the Peach Pit, he's talking about buying a 10-disc CD changer, so that should situate you in time.
His house or for his car?
For his car, sorry, for his car. Uh-huh. And the next day, he's still talking about it and alerting his parents that something is possibly up when he quotes an actual price, which is, do you want to guess, Dave?
Okay, car.
It's 1993.
See, 93. I'm going to guess that's going to run him $450.
Are you fucking serious? That's exactly what he says.
Yeah!
Dave wins both showcases. Yeah, that's exactly precisely what it is. $450. Well, that was more exciting than the entire episode combined. Brandon later blows off dinner with Iris to go watch the basketball. We'll speak more of her later, of course, to go watch the basketball game upstairs. Jim covers for him because he is a bad parent. And finally, Brandon comes home blasting what is apparently the world's loudest stereo with a set of keys just hanging out in the passenger seat without like a bag or any kind of packaging. I've never bought skis. Sarah, I assume you're a ski person. No? Did you ever have skis?
Yeah. Were you not here during the episode when I described slipping on a banana peel? No, I am not. I have been skiing a couple of times and learned my lesson. That does seem a little unusual that there would be no packaging.
Yeah.
But maybe with the packaging, it was so bulky that he couldn't get it into the car. But
it's a convertible.
I don't know.
I don't either.
Struggling to. Why are we still talking about this?
I don't know. I'm sorry. I don't know why I brought it up. Brenda is suspicious, but Cindy acts like it's gauche of Brenda to talk about money with her brother. And then Brandon distracts them both with gifts of perfume. End of storyline. Thank God. D story. Andrea's bulldog bullshit. Remember how Andrea got into Yale? That's still happening. She bitches about being, quote, poor, unquote, while getting ready to eat her mega burger, although I suppose it's probably on the house, so never mind. She's been invited to tea in what she describes as old money San Marino for Yale-bound students and is intimidated by the idea of having to mingle with a bunch of snobs more worldly than she is, as if that isn't her life every day at school in Beverly Hills, but whatever. She doesn't know she belongs at Yale. Brandon thinks she's having second thoughts. And then Andrea in her extremely mumsy outfit with white tights, obviously, attend the Yale tea. Some chip asks her how he knows her, and she is way too flustered, but offers a couple of nerd activities where they might have met. But no, he thinks he knows in clip number 2.
Tom. Is it Zuckerman?
Of course, you skied Alpine Meadows.
Your family has that big place out by the North Shore, by the Holloways?
The only place my family has is in Van Nuys.
That is so funny. Place in Van Nuys. Tedro, you've got to hear this.
Tedro. Is that a guy named Ted and a guy named Joe or a guy named Tedro? Either way, fuck all of these people and their fucking sleeveless sweater vests. But then as soon as Andrea is shoving an eclair in her mouth, Jordan is there saying hi. Jordan's back, everybody.
Yay!
I know. They're both on scholarships.
The only good thing Yale ever did. Just kidding.
Meryl Streep. I mean, she came back from that horrible "we're all Africans" remark, right? No? Anyway.
Mark Blankenship?
Oh, yeah, Mark, of course.
Drama school.
Sure. Later, Jordan and Andrea and her white tights have apparently only been talking to each other for this whole tea. We get more details of the scholarship sitch, to wit, Jordan got a full ride. And back at school in the Blaze office, Brandon asks Andrea about her tea like he cares. She tells him about running into Jordan, and then Jordan sends a fax.
A fax! Oh.
So cute. To Andrea, calling her his favorite Yalie, which is sweet, but Jordan could probably do better, and he will probably figure that out soon enough, but whatever. Moving on to our C story, David meets Curtis Bray. That is the guy's actual name, not a joke that we came up with.
What a waste of that name!
Steve sent a demo of David's to Icon Records, so there's some tiresome bickering back and forth over who owes what to whom for it, because a meeting has come out of it, and Steve escorts David to Same, where the receptionist, by the way, is a young Sharon Lawrence, with Donna along for no really good reason. David is tense, but not so tense he can't be a know-it-all about one of the label's acts, the Painkillers, in clip three.
It's trance, dance, synth, pop.
I asked for that clip, and it's just sort of like, maybe that was a thing? I don't feel like it was a thing. I don't think they would have been named the Painkillers,
no.
But this is just like, it's more the tone. Like, David has had and will continue to have this tone for the next, I'm going to say, 4 seasons,
yep.
Pretty consistently. Mm-hmm. Not sure why. Like, if you don't want to be there, get out of your contract.
Yeah.
It's, you know,
he's just so pissy and put upon. Like, I don't know. Yeah, you're right. That is how he sounds all the time. And when he has a drug problem next season, spoiler alert, it gets even worse. Anyway, they're told to wait as if Curtis Prey doesn't know who David is somehow. And then when we actually see him, it's this weird little trolley guy.
He comes out from under his bridge,
totally.
Gnawing on a goat.
He comes out of his private bathroom. We make sure that we hear the toilet flush. Like, we get it. He's gross. Anyway, what kept him from his appointed meeting?
No float is at Icon Records. You dig?
What kept him from his appointed meeting time was apparently all the rails he had to blow, judging by clip number 4.
Earring, David. Oh, thank God you have that unique look.
Yep. So he gave David's tape to Serge Menken, and we hear about that in clip number 5.
The producer? Is Serge Menken a producer? Well, for a while there, he wasn't. He thinks you're his comeback. Wait a second.
I'm sorry, this guy,
uh-huh.
Who's not David Silver in the scene.
Right. Curtis,
is he
Curtis
doing
Bray?
A really terrible Woody Allen impression? What's going on here?
He looks nothing like Woody Allen. I think he just has a dumb accent.
He's the poor man's Joe Pesci.
Okay.
Like,
yes.
Visually.
Yeah. Yep.
Get it.
Yep.
I get
yep.
it.
Yep.
You mean Serge wants to produce my record? Didn't I just say that? I mean, frankly, he needs us more than we need him. Now, that's a relationship.
Doesn't this guy have a drug problem?
In this business, who hasn't? I mean, I haven't. And you haven't. Please, tell me you haven't.
No, I haven't.
Good. No drugs. No songs about drugs. No songs about killing cops. Ideally, no songs about killing anyone.
Okay.
Stuff.
So they talk for like 2 minutes, and then Bray gets a phone call that he says he has to take, which is actually a fake phone call that's a pretext for getting rid of Steve from the office so that he can tell Dave to get rid of Steve. And apparently it's fire Steve or no deal for David. And at school, Steve bloviates about the deal. David, in the hallway, David vaguely refers to changes that the record label wants to make and manipulates Steve into saying that David calls the shots. And in the DJ booth, we find out that Donna already knows about this ultimatum and that David was supposed to have told Steve just now. But Kelly is also there, so we have to hear it retold. Kelly agrees with Donna that David should stop talking to the label over this. Even though, honestly, like, Steve doesn't know what he's talking about. Like, David doesn't either, except as an artist, but, like, whatever. Kelly turns David's dilemma around to be about herself and Brenda. Classic. At the Peach Pit, Steve pontificates to Nat about all the work he did in service of David's eventual stardom, which is bad timing because David enters just then and Steve to fire him, and Steve takes it poorly in clip number 6.
You know, I've done some pretty pathetic things in my life, but this... At least I know now that I'm not the lowest of the low.
Ooh.
That would be Brandon, because he's so short. It's been a while since I bagged on Brandon for being tiny, and now I'm done.
Moving on to our B story, Brenda's Brengeance. Open on a terrible music cue that is definitely not Losing My Religion in clip number 7. So bad. God.
Okay, if they grew like the gin blossoms and David Cook in a petri dish, it would be that. Is A. And B, when they get to the read between the lines part, and they play this a lot during the episode, so you hear it a bunch of times. I kept picturing Brenda holding up her like 3 fingers, like kids do. Read between the lines.
Totally.
The things that I had to do to stay awake during this episode, it was all like little mnemonics like this. Forgive me. You're going to have to hear about all of them.
Yeah, it's not good. Although, sidebar, the most recent episode of our sister podcast, Making the Sausage, is all about music clearance. So check that out as we record this. So that might offer some insight into why we have all this horrible, shitty temp music in these DVD versions of the episodes. Moving on, Brenda is listening to this very meaningful song, whatever it is, and poring over her Dylan archives. Soon a photo sends her into a fantasy where she attacks Dylan and Kelly with an axe, which is kind of funny. Brandon later comes in to check on Brenda to see how she's doing and tell her that people were asking after her at the Peach Pit. Brenda has no interest in keeping things from being weird for anyone else, and nor should she. God bless her.
Yeah, Brandon has a whole little speech where he's like, you know, this is a little weird for everyone. Like, are you really expecting her to sympathize with you in this situation?
Yeah. The way you were so sympathetic with her, having her back, except the opposite of that? Fuck you.
Yeah.
Anyway, she is interested in hearing that Iris is in town, which, again, we will get to. She figures that Jim kept Iris's visit from her because he thinks she's losing it. She admits to Brandon that she didn't think that asking Dylan to choose between her and Kelly was a contest because she never thought she would lose. Obviously neither of them thought they would lose or they would not have agreed to it. The next morning, Brenda comes down for breakfast and everyone tries not to react with shock that she is upright, but apparently they can't win. Clip number 8.
You know, yesterday you guys were asking me how I was every 2 seconds. Now today you're ignoring me. I really don't know which is worse.
Okay, Brenda, I'm on your side. But what the fuck are they supposed to do?
Like, well, you've been in the room 30 seconds. Give them the chance to say hi. Except they said good morning, so chill out.
Mm-hmm.
Ugh. Oh, and also she's wearing now the seafoam sweater of despair.
Mm-hmm. And she's got it like pulled down like halfway up the side of over her hands like... what's her face? Jennifer Love Hewitt on Party of Five always used to do. Like, we get it. You're vulnerable. Anyway, she tells them to act normal and tries to assure everyone that she isn't cracking up. And then somehow Brenda later has the photo strip that we know she and Kelly gave to Dylan. I don't know why I'm so focused on this photo strip that they made in the photo booth, but I am. And staring at it sends her into another fantasy of Kelly stopping by to talk to her. She imagines Kelly saying that her friendship with Brenda is more important than a relationship with Dylan, but I guess she doesn't believe it even in her fantasy because then she cuts a huge chunk out of the back of Kelly's hair. And by hair, I mean wig. Later, Jim walks past Brenda's room in the morning and sees her sitting motionless on the bed. He tries to be normal like she said he should, and she loses it in clip number 9.
Hang in there, champ.
Dad. I can't do it. I'm trying so hard to be mature and not hate them, and it's like I'm drowning and I can't breathe and I don't know what to do.
Brenda.
Daddy, help me, please. It just goes over and over again in my head and I can't make it stop.
Oh, sweetheart.
He dumped me, Dad, for my best friend. Why? What did I do to deserve this?
Oh, it's true. She didn't deserve that. He is Jimmy.
I know. That scene, it makes me sad.
It's hard. Her. I mean, she, Shannon Doherty plays it very well. Like, it would be bad enough if it was only Dylan dump me. But, like, the circumstances make it so much worse. Poor kid.
And then, like, they're all in all the same classes. They never see anyone else. It's mm-hmm. a giant school, but they're the ruling clique, and they're all stuck with each other, I guess, like the Romanovs.
Oh, man.
Till they're rounded up and shot. Spoiler.
You will spoil it.
At school, went to a dark place. Sorry.
At school, Kelly tries to connect with Brenda again, and it does not go well in Clipton.
Brenda. Please don't shut me out like this. Kelly, you have Dylan now. What more do you want?
Again.
Yep.
I mean, she's not Kelly. Brenda is not wrong. Like, it's not Brenda's job to make Kelly feel less guilty. Like, Kelly is going to have to live with that for a while because she was part of a shitty set of circumstances that ended in this. So, whatever. Like,
it's a great line, too.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you won.
Yeah.
Go dry your tears on Dylan's short sleeve Baja top.
I was wondering where that was going to end. On his hair?
Please don't do that.
Kleenex width torso? I don't know. Brenda is moping in her room later when Iris shows up for dinner and asks to go up and give her the gift that she brought, of course, because it's Iris. It's a fucking crystal. Which she says is to protect Brenda from negative energy, and it comes with some Pinko advice in clip 11.
Like everything else, Brenda, even despair eventually exhausts itself.
Well, it's exhausting me.
Your relationship with Dylan isn't over. This is just one moment in a very long lifetime.
I'm not sure what Dylan told you, but it is definitely over. All that's left now is headed right for the trash.
Close your eyes.
What?
Close your eyes and get a mental picture of the happiest time you and Dylan had together.
Is this some kind of new age visualization thing?
Okay. I stopped the clip there because, like scintillating in an earlier episode, I think visualization is another word that the writers put in the script because they knew that Shannon Doherty couldn't pronounce it. And that visitilization is the take that made the edit. It must be the closest that she got. Anyway, we continue in clip 12.
Can you see it? Is there something in that box from that time?
As it were.
Your relationship with Dylan is far deeper than a box full of memories. You stood by him when no one else did.
Great. So he thanks me by falling in love with my best friend.
A wise man once said, salvation is attained by being so clear-headed and inwardly strong, you can meet your opponent halfway.
I can't ever imagine being that clear-headed or that strong.
You already are.
Oh, I do feel a little better.
Good.
Must be the crystal.
Maybe. And again, maybe it's you.
I'm not sure what Brenda is expecting to get out of this exchange. I mean, I know that Iris opened the door by being the one to go upstairs, but, like, this is still Dylan's mom. Like, he's not going to join you in talking shit about him, probably.
Yeah, and I don't know. Like, it being his mom, take the advice to meet him or Kelly halfway with a crystal of salt.
Yeah.
The size of his shoebox head, because fuck him.
Mm-hmm.
Like, it's been, like, 4 days at this point.
Yeah.
I'm not really sure why Brenda has to, like, why is that a sign of strength to, like...
Yeah.
I don't know, forgive and move on. Like, I guess it's easier for everyone socially, and eventually it's exhausting to hold a grudge and you just have to be, like, polite. But
right. Whatever. But you're right. It's hardly been any time at all. Like, she's allowed to continue to wallow for at least a few more days if she wants, as far as I'm concerned. Anyway, at school, Brenda in her dumpy sweater clutch her crystal and approach Kelly to say hi. And Kelly is glad that Brenda's talking to her again, even if it only lasts for like half a pleasantry. And finally, Brenda brings down her box of Dylan mementos and tells Cindy that she's decided to put it in the garage instead of the trash, but makes Cindy promise that if she sees Brenda mooning at it, she should burn it. funny. Finally, our A-plot, All Things Dylan-y, the sequel. Kelly and Dylan make out on his couch. There's exposition about needing to clean up the place before his mother's plane arrives, and Kelly jokes about it, but it's clear that she's nervous about meeting Iris. Also, just to back up a little bit, that's the exchange between Brenda and Iris in Brenda's room over the crystal and everything else is like just another plank in the whole, like, Brenda knows Dylan more intimately because she has this bond with his mom, blah, 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 which is also going to be an issue again later. Anyway, Iris, of course, shows up at Dylan's house hours earlier than she was expected. Low jinx ensue. Dylan is not that welcoming because he's caught off guard slash with boner and refers to having wanted to clean up. Iris rolls her eyes and says she doesn't know how Brenda puts up with this. And of course, that's when Kelly comes out of the back. Iris is weird, really weird, asking Dylan quietly who Kelly is instead of just greeting her like a person, but then after shaking hands has to tell Kelly that she buttoned her sweater wrong, rookie mistake. And Kelly goes straight from this exchange to the Peach Pit to find someone to talk to about the meeting and finds a curious Donna. Brandon and his two fucking chains show up to take Kelly's order, but she doesn't want anything because she has an eating disorder. She then whines about how much more Iris likes Brenda than Kelly right in front of Brenda's brother, although as we established in the last episode, that doesn't mean anything. And then Iris comes into Jim's office to meet with him about the Dylan situation. She admits that she's never been good at standing up to Jack and thought she wouldn't have to worry about him when he was locked up. And then talk turns to Dylan's part in all of this in clip 13.
Can't Dylan see he's just being conned?
Dylan says that Jack's a new man.
The only thing new about Jack is that he's never preyed on his own son before. He's a salesman, Jim. He tells people what they want to hear. They buy into it. And what Dylan wants to hear is that he has a father.
Stephanie Beecham overacts in this part so much.
Oh my God, truly.
But speaking of, she's obviously cautious and right to do so, or be so, rather. Speaking of Dylan having a father, now he's watching his dad shave, good Lord, with the cliches. Jack has a warning about the imminent family reunion in clip 14.
You know, Dylan, you're going to hear things from your mom.
Already have.
Well, the truth is, if she's talking about the past, most of it is probably true.
She's convinced you're gonna try to rip me off.
You think I'm gonna rip you off?
I don't know.
Then why are you going along with this?
Because I want to believe you. I mean, you made the money in the first place. You gave it to Iris. She gave it to me. I want to give something back.
What?
To what?
Thanks, kid. You know, I'm glad that money's yours. Hell, if it were still in my name, you and I'd both know it'd be gone. You know, maybe this way we can both have a future. And so can your mom.
You mean that?
When I gave Iris that money, I didn't give a damn what she did with it. I just wanted her out of my sight line. She could have gone on a hell of a shopping spree, but she didn't. She saved that money for her only child. Quite a woman, your mother.
Yeah.
In fact, we'd probably still be together if she weren't such a kook.
Yeah, she is.
Yeah, mother of the fucking year from Hawaii. Mm-hmm. Whatever.
Whatever. Jack bores Dylan about the bargains that are available now that the recession.
Oh my God, that's so annoying. How do the writers think investments work? It's not an eBay store. Whatever.
But Sarah, the recession's got everybody on the run. Whatever. He guesses that Jack guesses there's something that Iris wants and basically orders Dylan to kiss her ass to get her on side, basically proving that when Iris called Jack a salesman, she was not wrong. And the next day, Iris is drinking her green juice, because of course she is, when Dylan rolls over on the futon and sees her. And she asks if he was out the night before with Jack or Kelly, was first one, then the other. He suggests that rather than sit around his house getting on each other's nerves, they should go to Ojai. She's into it and comments that he seems happy. He agrees that he is, partly because of Kelly and partly because Jack's out of prison. She doesn't comment on that last part. He suggests that they all have dinner that night because it'll mean a lot to him. And she seems like she knows what he's doing, but she agrees anyway. And then it's dinner. Jack is jolly and asks about Ojai in clip 15.
We visited a school.
A school, huh? What kind of school?
Just a small alternative school. It's a place where spirituality is as much a part of the curriculum as academics.
Well, I went to one like that, only mine had nuns that whopped you on the hand with a ruler if you got out of line.
Iris is thinking about starting a similar school in Hawaii.
Really? School? Well, that sounds ambitious.
It's only a pipe dream. I don't have that kind of money.
Dylan does.
Yeah, Mom, just say the word. It's all yours.
You're in on this, too.
What? Did I say something wrong?
You've done a real good job, Jack. You've trained your son very well. To think that I was actually naive enough to think that Dylan wanted to spend the day with me. Get my coat, please, Dylan. We're leaving.
Wait a minute.
You bought me off once, Jack. I am not falling for it again.
That's not what's going on here.
Oh, no, let me tell you something. I didn't sacrifice to save that money for you just so he could get his hands on it.
Iris, I agree. It was wrong to keep you away from your son all those years. But don't try to control him now just to get even with me.
Don't talk to me about control.
Oh, come on, Iris. Why can't we just start all over again for Dylan's sake?
Oh, please. That's a joke.
Mom.
Dylan, I am leaving. You can do what you want.
Dylan always does what he wants. Haven't you figured that out by now? I can't tell him what to do any more than you can.
No. You're just his father. The only father in America who's in it for the money.
Ooh. Cut.
That little cascade-y sound is so ridiculous.
I know, Jesus. Everyone just get on with it.
I also have in my notes, which you can see in the visual aids, Jack smug and necklace, because as she is laying into him, he's sitting down, he's in like a mock turtleneck sweater under a jacket, and he's like got his whole chin sucked into his neck. He looks so weird and turtle-y. It is not his best moment. He's normally, as we have said before, an attractive older gentleman, but here he's like just, you know, awful.
And his hair really looks like it has no shape. It is the color that is no color.
Yes.
It's just this like such vague hair. Like do something. Like you can't even see like brush marks in it. Like is this a cloud that just happened to pass by and get stuck to his head? It's so weird. Anyway, whatever.
Yeah. Again,
his pants are of the correct size, however.
They are indeed. So the next morning, Iris and Dylan have a testy breakfast in clip 16. Breakfast of testies.
Iris, I've been very capable of getting myself to school for some time now, so I'd appreciate it greatly if you just dropped the parental guidance.
Shut up.
You don't seem to have a problem with your father's parental guidance at all.
No, I don't.
You know, for the life of me, I can't figure out why you believe him.
Because I spent more time with him since he's been behind bars than I ever did growing up. You know what, Iris? I like him.
That is absolutely frightening.
All my life, people turn their backs on me. I know what it feels like. I won't do it to him.
You know, the two of you deserve each other.
So does that mean you're going to sign?
No, that means you're going to school.
Again, hey. Dylan's motivation, totally all over the map, like... I don't know, whatever. All the stuff with him and his dad is so pointless when you know how it's going to end. It's hard to get that invested in it at this point.
Dylan's being a dick. Shocker.
At school, Dylan tells Kelly that he's given up on getting Iris to dissolve the trust before he's of age. But when we next see them together, Iris is telling Dylan that she's stopping at Jim's on the way to the airport so that she will sign the papers, and repeats the advice that she gave Brenda about meeting your opponent halfway. Wah, wah. And in his office, Jim is shocked that Iris changed her mind, and she says it's for Dylan in clip 17.
Jim, what am I trying to hold on to? Not my son. If anything, I'm driving him away. And if all I'm holding on to is my contempt for Jack, well, maybe it's time I gave that up too.
No.
Keep it.
Well, keep it.
Spoiler, it won't last that much longer, so... whatever.
Right. And like, why?
Contempt it up.
Why was it important to you to keep this money for Dylan until he got to a certain point? And now, like, 3 years shy of him being of age to control it himself, you're just like, well, whatever, I guess. Like, just because he's whining about it, give me a break.
Yeah, he whines about everything.
Right. So Jim's face betrays how little he agrees with her on the importance of maintaining contempt for Jack, which is funny. But she just wants Dylan to be happy. And if the worst that happens with the trust, i.e. Jack stealing all the money and absconding into the night, she never believed that money could buy happiness anyway. And at home
then
later on,
she's doing it wrong. That's all I'm going to say about that.
At home later, Jim admits to Cindy that he still regards Dylan as a son and wouldn't throw a son of his to the wolves the way Iris is apparently willing to do, in his opinion. So he's going to tell the attorneys to stall with the papers. But then once they actually finish, he's going to have to figure out whether he's going to sign. And at the Bel Age, Jack gloats in clip 18.
Well, congratulations, kid. I got to hand it to you. Iris came, Iris saw, you conquered.
I'm not out to conquer anybody, Jack, least of all my own mother.
Oh, I know, but she signed, didn't she? Just like I knew she would. Cigar, anybody? Take it that minute, no? Well, this one is in celebration of my new family. You and me, son. And at the risk of sounding sentimental, I just want to say that I haven't been this happy in a long time.
I'm glad.
You were in prison. It's like zero bar to clear. Also, your new family is like a gazillion guys named Benjamin. Whatever.
Also, Dylan is such a badass that he's going to like cough and carry on like a passive-aggressive doyen when Jack acts like he's going to light a cigar in his own hotel room. Whatever. I mean, I also think cigars are gross, but I don't present myself as some kind of latter-day Lord Byron. Anyway, after some brief talk about how little dinner Kelly ate because she has an eating disorder, Dylan comes in to get his jacket.
I'm just trying to imagine what it would be like if you did present yourself as latter-day Lord Byron. It would be really weird and we'd have to have you committed. Oh, God.
My hair would not be that different, probably. Anyway, Dylan comes in to get his jacket, and when he leaves, Jack resumes his suspect conversation in our final clip.
Listen, I lied through my teeth to my kid to get that money. Now, you guys hold up your end of the bargain, or the deal is off.
Thrum. Oh, no. What does Jack
He's about to
planned?
Be incepted.
Yeah. So that's it. Very boring episode. Let us wrap it up by starting with our episode MVP. Everyone's kind of terrible. Jordan.
Yes, Jordan.
He follows up with a nice fax. It's a class move of 1993.
Yeah. And everyone else is dressed like their 80-year-old grandparents. Mm-hmm. He's just wearing, like, his usual rugby shirt. He's like, fuck you guys.
Yes. Yeah.
And he also, a man after my own heart, his little tea sandwich plate, mm-hmm. he has, like, this giant Jenga of sandwiches on it.
He does.
Attaboy.
Yeah, Jordan. That was easier than I thought. Okay, episode least valuable player.
This will be a tough one.
Iris, because she should be more responsible. That's the point of being a parent. I mean, I know her whole character brief is like she's a flake, but she had the sense to act a certain way about this trust up to this point, and for her to just be like, eh, let's just see what happens is dumb.
Yeah. I gotta go with Dylan.
Fair enough. Like,
there's like hopeful naivete, and then there's Dylaning.
Yeah. Well, speaking of Dylan, let's do the Kim challenge.
Bad, bad, and dangerous to me.
Five ways in this episode that Dylan proves he is mad, bad, and dangerous to know. He lies to his mom about wanting to take her to Ojai for a nice day. That's pretty bad.
He fails to join her in drinking that green sludge. That could be bad for his health.
He sleeps on the futon, which is probably dangerous for his spinal alignment.
Jim might pry that giant penny off the wall of his desk and beat him to death. That's kind of dangerous.
And he's just he's not as mad as he should be, frankly, about Jack's very transparent maneuvering to get his hands on his trust. So I don't know. That's 4.5, I
guess.
Yeah,
or as mad as he should be about Jack's wearing a double-breasted jacket over a white turtleneck. Don't do that, anyone ever, even in the past. Okay, thanks, bye.
Finally.
Why should I take a back seat? Because I'm a girl?
You shouldn't. It's our excerpt from the I Hate Brenda book. Shannon already exposed just a very short excerpt as we wrap up our chapter on Beverly Hills 90210. Of course, they left Gabrielle Carteris for last. Why wouldn't they? and this was alluded to in our last excerpt, but here they spell it out. But if one picture is worth 1,000 words, Gabrielle's wedding photo says 1,000 about her feelings for Shannon. Uninvited. All the other cast members were present at the event, and Shannon didn't seem to be missed. No love was lost between the two, as friends have said that Gabrielle and Shannon can't stand the sight of one another. Shannon, with her usual flair for calling the kettle black, has declared that their differences stem from Gabrielle's bossy nature. In either case, the feeling of animosity is mutual.
Ooh, well, speaking of animosity, next time on Again With This... Brenda knows Kung Fu. David's new producer has him singing a sad song. Brandon's a loser. And when... And when Jack McKay finally gets his mitts on Dylan's trust, it's the bomb! We blew up everyone's fashion spot in the visual aids for this episode and all the other episodes of Beverly Hills 90210 that we've covered on Again With This. You can see those at previously.tv and follow us on Twitter at previouslytv. I'm Sarah D. Bunting. I'm on Twitter at Tomato Nation. My esteemed co-host Tara Ariano is on Twitter at Tara Ariano. And you can find our esteemed producer, David T. Cole, at Glark on Instagram. We'll see you next time.
Hi, you know what to do after the beeparoni.
This has been a production of the Previously.tv podcast network.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, and Emory Education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
Lowe's knows to bring your vision to life, it's important to find the right color. That's why Mylowe's Rewards members get a free Valspar paint or exterior stain sample to test your look to confidently refresh your space. Offer valid in-store only 87 to 820. Limit one per customer while supplies last. Discount taken in time of purchase. See associate for details. Rewards program subject to terms and conditions. Details at lowes.com/terms. Subject to change.